We're learning about the Tashlumei Chavala, the various kinds of payment you make for personal injury. I want to discuss a fascinating case or a group of cases tonight, while not directly connected to the halachas we're learning, makes for some very interesting discussion. First version. This past Shabbos, I saw in Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein's Sefer B'Haravna the following case. A child needs a kidney transplant. Mother agrees to donate a kidney. They do some inspection of the woman. They decide that the right kidney is the one they're going to take out and give to the kid. Hires a surgeon. Surgeon goes in, mistakenly takes out the left kidney. Woman is not happy. Fires up her lawyers. Starts to sue. Kidney goes to the laboratory. It turns out the kidney is cancerous. Now, any of you have any familiarity with Rav Zilberstein, his cases, he always has the best cases. Whether his stories are real stories or not, some of it is self-perpetuating. Everyone knows he's the address for the coolest, most interesting cases, especially Chosh and Mishpat. But I don't know if this is a true story or not. The kidney is cancerous. So, unfortunately, we're not told of the fate of the young boy, what happened to him and his transplant, but the mother's life was saved by this serendipitous mistake. The mother nevertheless goes ahead and sues the doctor for malpractice. The doctor goes ahead and sues the woman for payment for his successful surgery. So, what's the din? We're interested primarily in the first question, is the surgeon chayav anything for chavala? Now, it's hard even to define what the chavala is. Let's say the kidney wouldn't have been cancerous and somebody would take out the right kidney instead of the left kidney. So, you still have to figure out what exactly the damage is. Assuming the kidneys are roughly equal in function, I don't know if that's true or not, but assuming that there's no significant difference in a woman missing a right kidney or a left kidney, there wouldn't be much in the way of nezek, or even tzar. Assuming the surgery caused the same amount of tzar, the same amount of sheves, the same amount of ripui, I'm not sure what the claim is. You could argue, since I never wanted you to take the left kidney, it's like you took a kidney without permission at all, and you pay the entire thing, missing a kidney, nezek. In this case, though, the kidney was cancerous, and if anything, you saved her life. Is there any din chavala? Is there any chiyuv of any sort of compensation to the victim, lucky victim, whatever you want to call her? Second version of the shaila. This I saw several years ago in Rav Shlomo Zafrani's Sefer, the Shimru Mishpat. We saw a couple of passages from him back when we did Yari Lomnus. He discusses a case. A car thief breaks into a car to steal it. He's driving off with the car, Grand Theft Auto. He hears some kind of gasps or squealing from the back seat. He realizes a child has been left behind in the car. The child is in a bad way. He's suffocating, lack of oxygen. So this thief actually did the right thing. He promptly turned around and headed for Magen David Adom, who fortunately revived the child, stabilized his condition. Now they did have to find the child's parents, so the thief admitted he was not the owner of the car and the father of this child. They tracked down the father via the automobile registration. After the father was reunited with his child, he thanked the guy for saving his kid and promptly sued him for damaging his car. So, Rav Zafrani discusses, does he have any liability for damage to the car or not? Very similar shaila. Looked at in a narrow, specific way, he caused some damage, but on balance, it was a very good thing that he did. Had you asked the guy up front, would you want this? Of course he would want this. In both cases, the woman certainly, in hindsight, we see the whole God's plan for her. We see what happened. The surgeon ultimately did her a big favor, and the car thief ultimately did the father a big favor by saving his son's life. The assumption, again, Rabbi Zafrani repeats, the assumption is there was no other way to save this kid without breaking in. We're not talking about a case where he could have just done something to save the kid's life without breaking into the car, without getting into the technicalities. So it turns out that he actually did a big favor, but looked at narrowly, he caused a hezek. Is this considered mazik or not? Both Rabbi Zafrani and Rabbi Zilberstein reach the same conclusion, more or less. They both argue that the mazik, the ganav, is potter. The doctor is potter. They all argue, this is not called hezek. This is the svara we were just alluding to. On balance, this was a good thing rather than a bad thing. This was something he would have wanted. Rabbi Zafrani talks about Yishlomi Das, he didn't know about it, but basically the basic argument without getting into all the technicalities is, this is something that was good for him, something he would have wanted. In the case of the doctor, something he was mechuyev to do to save the woman's life. Even though his intention was not good, his intention was, in the case of Rabbi Zafrani, was malicious, was criminal. In the case of the doctor, it was criminally negligent, maybe. But it makes no difference. Objectively, what he did was not is not considered hezek in the big picture. And therefore, his intention, his carelessness, his criminality makes no difference. Rabbi Zafrani doesn't really bring a riot to this. He just takes this for granted, kind of. He says he thinks it's true. Rabbi Zilberstein brings an interesting riot. There's a Gemara in Shabbos. The halacha is a malacha of tzad, of capturing living beings. You throw a net into the water, catch fish, you're chayav a carbon chatas, or a misa if it's amazing. Let's say a person forgets a Shabbos, casts his net, classic chayav chatas, hauls up the net, there's fish inside, there's also a baby. A baby fell into the water, he didn't see the baby when he cast his net, a tinuk, he saved the baby's life. He also caught fish. Do you say that on balance, throwing the net in was something that was good, was a mitzvah, atalas nefashos, and was fine, mutter on Shabbos, of course? Or do you say that wasn't his intention? His intention was something which was a chiyuv chatas, to throw in the net and catch fish, and he should be chayav chatas. This is a machlokes amoraim. Rabba says we follow maisa, we follow objectively what he did. What he did was hatzala, life-saving. Rabba says we follow machshava. In his mind, he was doing tzedek, catching fish. The halacha, in Shulchan Aruch, we don't have hilchas chatas, but the halacha, the Rambam, Paskins, like Rabba, apparently. I saw Rav Zilberstein's citation of this, that la halacha, we follow Rabba, that we go basar masav, objectively what you did was hatzala, not tzedek, hatzala and tzedek, which is mutter, you're allowed to throw in the net, even if you know you're going to catch fish, if you need to save the baby. So la halacha, this is called hatzala, this is something that is permitted, and therefore, even though that was not your intention, you're not chayav achatas. Analogously, says Rav Zilberstein, we can say, on balance, what the doctor did was hatzala, he saved the woman's life. And even though that wasn't his intention, he's still potter. Now he concedes the analogy between Hilchas Shabbos and Hilchas Nizakin is not necessarily a perfect one. You could make a distinction, but nevertheless, this is his intention. And again, this is also Rabbi Zafrani's position, that we don't particularly care about your intention, even a deliberately criminal intention, as in Rabbi Zafrani's case. We don't care as long as objectively this is something that was good for the victim, that, and it's something he would have wanted, something that was the right thing to do. That is fine, and you are not chai of anything for hezek, for chaval, or anything else. Now, one lachara raya against this idea, one raya which neither of them bring, that we do follow when it comes to chosh and mish, but we do follow intent, not simply objectively whether he would have wanted it, is a tshuva I once encountered in the Sefer Makar Baruch. Makar Baruch is Rav Baruch Halkili, not to be confused with the Tartamima's Makar Baruch. The Rav Baruch Halkili was a noted posting from about 400 years ago, around 1600 in Salonika, in Turkey. He discusses the following case. There was a tenant who rented a house from a landlord. Tenant operated an oven. The oven fire got out of control one day and started to burn down the house. So he himself, the tenant, along with some people, he marshaled to help him. They aggressively made efforts to put out this fire, to stop it from spreading to the house. To do so, they made a fire break, basically. They tore down part of the building. They tore off part of the roof. The roof, I guess, was thatched or slats or something, which is very flammable. So to prevent the fire from spreading, they actively, deliberately caused damage to the house. So Makar Baruch spends most of his tshuva arguing that he's responsible for the fire in the first place because it was considered his carelessness that the oven got out of control. So that's not relevant to us. But at the end of the tshuva, he says, let's say we were to assume the fire was not his fault. Let's say the house caught fire through no fault of his. So then, would he be chayev for damaging the house in order to put out the fire? Absolutely not, he says. Of course, he would not be chayev for breaking the house because he did it to save the house from burning down. So he broke a small part of the landlord's house in order to save the whole thing from going up in smoke. That was certainly for the landlord's benefit, and therefore he would not be chayev. However, he says, that's only true insofar as his motive was actually to save the landlord's house. If his motive was to save his own property, which was sitting in the house, he didn't want all his furniture to burn up, his beds and his tables and his chairs and everything else, then he's chayav, or at least he's chayav part of the money. He has to split it with the landlord, the cost of the damaging, because they say he saved both their assets. He saved his furniture, his metalkalim. He also saved the landlord's house. So he says that the halakha would be they would have to split. They would have to split the cost of the damage that was done. Either because, how do you split? Either based on the value of the respective assets, furniture versus house, or based on the quantity, how much, just physically how much property each one had. And then he says, we're not really going to get into that because not again in his case. In his case, he holds the tenant caused the fire, so he's chayav for everything. I'll call upon him, the Makar Baruch says explicitly that this din, even though he agrees in principle that when you damage someone's property, but it's for his own good, you're potter, that's only insofar as that was your motive. If your motive was to save your own property, even if you knew his house was on fire, you knew you would be saving both of you, still you have to split the loss. Kolshkin, if you didn't even know about you saving him, you didn't know there was cancer, you didn't know there was a kid in the back seat, your only motive was either your own carelessness or your own interest in stealing the car, L'char would be a kal v'chomer, according to him, that you would be responsible for the damage you caused, and you couldn't claim that, well, it turned out it was for your benefit, so I'm not going to pay for it. Something to think about, whether there's any way to resolve this Makar Baruch.
Is there any reason he gives for that?
He takes for granted. He says that this idea that you're potter when you do something that's for someone else is good, but if you needed the same thing, if you had another motive in doing it too, then you both needed it. So you both should bear the cost of the damage. If there was an expense you had, in general, this is a principle of shutfus or a rule in Chasher Mishpat. If there's an expenditure or an effort that two people need, let's say, for example, we have to bring a utility line out to our development, and we all have houses here. So we all have to contribute to the cost to bring the line out. So here, if we both have, both our property is on fire, the fire is going to burn all of our stuff down. We all have to chip in, whatever it costs. Let's say we have to hire a bucket brigade. We all have to bear the cost equally. Well, not equally, based on the assets that we have, perhaps. If it's the danger of life, maybe equally, but danger of property, depends on how much property we each have. So he looks at this the same way. Even though it's true, you're very thankful to me for breaking the roof and saving your house, but I needed to do it too, because I needed to save my furniture. So we both needed to break the house. So just because it was your house, he says, you know, the riots he gets into are a little complicated, but that's his assumption.
Well, what was that saying with catching the fish and saving the kittens? Does all those cases follow through on that logic?
Well, again, Rabbi Zilberstein himself admits that the case of the fish is Hilchos Shabbos, which has a different logic possibly than Chasher Mishpat. Chasher Mishpat is all about who should bear a cost. Hilchos Shabbos is about, did you do an Avera, did you not do an Avera, which possibly has a different kind of calculus.
I mean, that's for me, sir, right?
At the end of the day, you're still saving the other person. You're saving the owner's property. But even though your intent is to put out your own fire, if he hadn't do that, it would still spread to the rest of the house.
Yeah, 100%. So
where do you draw the line? Was enough? I mean, in this case over here, that like, oh, whether he had an intent to stop his own property, his own personal items from being burned, to the other cases. At the end of the day, he still stopped the owner from.
That's true, but the Poskim, for example, discuss cases where a bunch of people are captured by bandits and they have to pay, you know, one fixed ransom for everyone. So it's true that every person needs the ransom for himself, but if they all need it equally, they all have to chip in. And if one person laid out the money, he has the right to chip. According to some Poskim, at least, in some cases, he has the right to send the bill to other people. That you can't freeload of somebody else. If we both need something equally, so the fact that the money came from me doesn't necessarily mean that I have to. It's a complicated topic. We can discuss it further later. But and you can disagree with this fact too. I'm just pointing out this is an early precedent which seems to be taking a different approach than these later achronim. Just want to close with one other angle on this question. Famous story, apocryphal story attributed to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. I just heard a share tonight from Shalom Kamenetsky, who said that they say the story over, although he cast some doubt on it. Story goes that somebody had two rare stamps. Each one, they were very rare. There were only, you know, two or three of them in the world. Each one was worth $1,000. Someone went ahead and destroyed one of the two stamps, just vanished up in smoke. But now the other one is worth much more. The other one is worth maybe $2,000 now, twice. So on balance, the total net worth of the victim hasn't changed. But the stamp you destroyed is gone. The Rav Chaim is reputed to have ruled that Nezik isn't viewed narrowly, specifically by, at least in this basic case, is not viewed by narrowly that you destroyed a stamp. You say, on balance, you haven't done anything. And therefore, you would be potter. A much more realistic and practical case, which is discussed in a documented way by many achronim, a full discussion is beyond the scope of the couple of minutes we have left, is the question, I was just actually talking to someone about a version of this question this morning, if you destroy property, you damage property of somebody else which is insured, or the case I was asked about, the victim had a warranty on the property. Are you chayav to pay? Can you say, just go to your warranty provider? You're not really damaged. You're going to have the same money at the end of the day. You're covered. Or do you say, no, I don't care if covered or not covered. That's my business. I made a deal with an insurer. I paid premiums for it. My premiums are going to go up if I make a claim. That's between me and my insurer. What does that have to do with you? You damaged the property. So this case actually is discussed in a documented way by many achronim. The consensus, the Marsham, the Ar Sameach, the Chalkas Yoav, contemporary poskim, by and large agree that the mazik still has to pay. The fact that it's insured is not his affair. That's a private business deal that was done between the victim and the insurer. It's like a bet. It's like a contract they have. But you still damage a property, you pay for it. There is a minority view, a sheet of the Hari Basamim, possibly one or two others, who say that, no, that's not called hezek. Since he's covered, he won't have any loss from it. You didn't do anything. You didn't cause him any damage. That's a minority view. So there are similar considerations that operate in these cases too. The case of the kidney we started with. Is there hezek because you damaged this kidney? Or do you say, on balance, the woman is better off. She's healthier now that Pesach HaKol, she's missing the cancerous kidney. Not an exact tushtel, because in the case of Rav Chaim, let's say, of the two stamps, this stamp is damaged. Another stamp is worth more. The case of the insurance, this refrigerator is totaled, this car is totaled, he'll get cash in the bank. Here, the woman is one person, the woman is now simply, on the whole, better off or not worse off, at least, from what you did. So,
the guy with the stamp is also better off.
That's true, but his two individual pieces of property, one is worse and one is better. When you look at the property that was damaged, the woman who was damaged is one woman. Again, you can argue, you should look at each of her organs separately and say this organ is worse and that organ is better. You can debate it, yes. You can debate. Even in the case of insurance, there are all kinds of different cases and distinctions, which unfortunately we don't have time for now. But these are just some of the considerations. These are, I think, the main considerations that go into these various cases we've been discussing, the cases of Rabbi Zifrani and Rav Zilberstein, and some of these other cases of insurance and hezek.